Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, new rumors about Tiana's Bayou Adventure, the Adventureland Treehouse is ready to open, Pixar Place Hotel has an opening date,
Toontown may be finishing up some tweaks, we talked to author J. Jeff Kober about the first 100 years of Disney, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Well, hello there. Welcome to our unbirthday party. For your safety, please be sure to stay listening with your hands, arms, feet, and ears inside the podcast. And please, do give Peg and Teresa easier trivia questions. Well, it seems DL Weekly is about to begin. Have a most wonderful time. Perhaps tea time.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of October 25th, 2023. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. Thank you to Catherine H., Stephanie P., and Christy J. for becoming official weekly tiers on our Patreon. Our supporters get some pretty fun perks like DL Weekly swag, bonus content, and access to our Discord community. A side note for all of our current weekly tiers, our bonus episode should be releasing within... well, pretty soon. Within the week, we hope. A special thank you to Sammy B., and Sherry M. for your continued support. If you would like some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to join.
We always forget to talk about this early enough. We do send out some Christmas cards holiday cards. So this would also be a good time to visit Patreon and make sure that we have your current address on file. So when we mail those out, we don't get a bunch of return stuff. So please, please, please go to patreon.com, log into your account. And if you go into your account settings, make sure your address has been updated so we can get that to you. Well, you've heard us talk about our great experiences staying at the Howard Johnson Anaheim. Well, we've partnered with them to offer listeners some cool discounts. And, you know, the holidays are coming up. A lot of people like to take trips to the parks for the holidays. Why not stay at the Howard Johnson Anaheim? Well, if you're a weekly tier, you can get 15% off of your stay. And Magic Keyholder weekly tiers get 20% off. To take advantage of these discounts, head on over to dlweekly.net and click on the Howard Johnson logo. Be sure to use the promo codes listed on the website to get the discount that you qualify for.
Now let's get to the news.
Well, over at Mice Chat, Dusty Sage was able to have a conversation with a higher-up associated with Tiana's Bayou Adventure, where he expressed his dismay at the focus on the search for a missing ingredient. You know, it's been kind of a controversial thing. But if Dusty's right, there is a lot more going on with this attraction. Per his conversation, it's a sort of fake-out for guests, concealing the fact that they're doing a lot more with this attraction than has been announced. Massive set pieces are being installed to make this much more grand than the attraction that it's replacing. They're also spending a considerable amount on this project that they could have built an entirely new attraction with. I was surprised to hear all of this.
This is so not that I needed more excitement for this, because the concept art that they've released for Tiana's Bayou Adventure, gorgeous, just gorgeous. The film has some of my favorite songs, such fun characters. The transition made a whole lot of sense to me, turning Splash Mountain into a Tiana Bayou themed attraction. They did start to lose me when the more we were hearing about this, the storyline with the missing ingredient, you know, we got to thinking, we're like, you're zipping. You are zipping in that log through that attraction. If they expect you to try and like pay attention to details to quote unquote find these missing ingredients, there's no way. Because even just with what Splash Mountain was and what they had for animatronics and just sets
tough.
And all that, it was tough to see, to like really see all the characters and really, you know, take it all in. So I was like, there's no way that you're going to be able to find missing ingredients. So I'm glad that's not sounding like it's going to be the main focus. Maybe that's still a part of the storyline, but the storyline's not going to be as complicated as what we originally thought. But how exciting that this is somehow going to be more great. Splash Mountain was not this piddly little, barely any decor. It wasn't like the old version of Fantasyland where it was all these 2D cutouts.
Right.
You know, so the fact that they're even going to be more elaborate, that I'm so excited to see what this is.
This is interesting to me because I feel like, okay, the first time this happened for us, or at least in my mind, the thing that always sticks out to me is they rethemed Tower of Terror to Guardians of the Galaxy. And I remember
Well, we were anti.
It was like, it's going to happen in 6 months, and it's going to be quick, and blah, blah, blah. And then, like, they painted the outside, and everybody was like, gasp. Mm-hmm. And all of us were, you know, because it was such a beloved attraction, much like Splash Mountain. But now, hearing these rumors, I'm like, Disney's doing it again. Imagineering is doing it again. They are selling it short. So then when it happens, we can all be like, well, I can't believe that we were ever skeptical about this.
Yeah.
Now, not to say that everything Disney does is perfect and great and excellent, but I think this might end up being one of those situations where, you know, we have a lot of nostalgia for the original attraction, of course. It's been there for a long time. We got used to seeing it as one of the mountains around the park. Like, it's, you know, it's an iconic thing. However, you know, and of course, you know, I'm sad and worried about things like the fact that, like, we're missing the tree stump at the top and all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm thinking that this might be really cool.
I still think the original concept art where they had Mama Odie's boat in the tree stump.
Would have been cool.
Oh, would have been perfect. I'm sure that's what they really wanted to do. And then something came up, either structurally they couldn't do it or, you know, whatever. But there was some, I'm sure.
Or maybe they were like, we could spend a bunch of money on that.
That's true.
Or we can pump it into a jaw-dropping show scene for the actual ride.
That's true. The other thing that Dusty mentioned in here was that the final scene is somehow going to be much more grand than what the final scene of Splash was. And again, that was a very big, grand final scene with the showboat and all that stuff. So anyway, I'm very excited. So again, not that we weren't excited about this before, because we definitely were, because man, that concept art is just...
Well,
gorgeous.
We saw it at D23.
Just gorgeous.
I mean, here's like the little
model that
thing.
They
like,
had at
D23 cool.
Was just, it looks really neat. I would like to fast forward and be able to see this right sooner rather than later, because it's just very exciting.
Well, I hate to say this, Teresa, but we're about 2 months away from 2024, and it's supposed to open sometime in 2024.
Yeah, we'll see.
So 14 months is the most amount of time we might have to wait for this.
Well, it is possible that by the time you listen to this, perhaps the Adventureland Treehouse could be open. All the scaffolding has been removed, and the construction tape is gone. The plastic and, like, the scrims, gone, gone, gone. The walls around the attraction seem to be the only thing holding back excited guests.
Oh, my goodness. I keep seeing pictures of this, and it looks like any moment the park is going to open in the morning, and guests are not even going to be aware, and they're going to come around the corner, and the walls will be done, and it'll be like,
poof,
gasp.
Yeah.
So I am waiting for this. I will say over at Mice Chat, they said that they're going to open it for employee previews potentially first.
I like when they do that.
Is nice. But all at the same time, I'm kind of like, just open it.
Usually what they do, usually the cast member previews is like the night before it opens type of thing. So it's not too much longer that the general public, us, would have to wait. But I mean, Mice Chat had some really great photos kind of zoomed in. There's a lot of the details and little signage things are all in place.
Mm-hmm.
So it really does look like
ready to go.
Yeah, it really does look like it's ready to go.
Well, speaking of ready to go, the Paradise Pier Hotel will officially become the Pixar Place Hotel on January 30th, 2024. The new Luxo Lamp Sculpture is yet to be installed, and the Great Maple Restaurant is still under construction, but the Disney Parks blog posted images of the new room decor and all of the reopening details. To see them yourself, head on over to the link in our show notes.
Okay. This was never a top property that I really felt the need to stay at before, but the room concept art has got me thinking maybe at some point we should stay here just because it looks so fun.
Is that concept or is that one of the renovated rooms?
I don't know if that's concept or if that's an actual room. I don't.
If you scroll down, does it say concept art only or whatever?
It does say artist concept only. It's hard to tell because the concept art looks so realistic now that it looks like it could be a photo.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just concept art. But it's so fun and colorful. I think they did a really nice job here because it's fun and colorful, but it's not, I can't think of another word other than tacky right now. It's very classy. It's not just like Luxo balls all over the place and whatever. It's still definitely Pixar. There is a mural that has different characters on it. There's this elongated pillow that kind of looks like the Luxo ball stretched out. But the rest of it, really, like the sheets in here have Luxo ball print, but it's like how they do it for the cruise line, where it's white sheet with a slightly different white
yeah, it's like subtle.
Fabric. So it's very, very subtle. And then, yeah, just like nice blue walls or some yellow touches. So they've kind of incorporated the classic Pixar colors in the rest of the room. But again, it's not just plastered floor so
there's,
ceiling.
There's a couple things I want to point out here.
There's a Luxo lamp on the desk.
Yeah, just took it from
me. Oh, sorry.
There's a couple things I want to point out here. And one of them is, If they put this Luxo lamp in the room, like that's just like that's a detail. You know what else though? Like I don't want to take away from the Pixar Place Hotel at all because I think this is amazing. But looking at this kind of setup, I'm kind of like, this is almost like the rooms at the Hojo. Like it's got a little, looks like a smart speaker. It's got the same kind of plug things. I don't know. It feels very similar to that. So it makes me happy.
It's clean and modern looking,
yeah,
which is what we love about the Hojo.
And
you've got the mid-century, there's a mid-century modern feel going. Not as much as what they've got going on over at the Disneyland Hotel, but there is a little mid-century modern vibe going as well.
The pool area looks really great and vibrant. By the way, did you look at these things that are by the pool?
Fire tables.
There's these little fire tables, and one of them is Jack-Jack with like his hair on fire. And one of them is what? Anger?
Anger.
With also his hair on fire. I'm like, this is
clever. So clever. I mean, that's what's so cool about Pixar Place Hotel is the details. There's so many little details. Again, it's there, but it's subtle. It's not knocking you over the head. I'm excited to see when this opens, how everything comes together.
It's going to be cool.
Well, as we have spoken about a few times on the podcast recently, Toontown is undergoing some updates to fix the land's main interactive fountain and Dreaming Trees section. The Centennial Park is scheduled to reopen on October 30th, and then Goofy's How to Play Yard will close that same day. Changes to this area are scheduled to wrap and reopen to the public on November 10th. Hopefully, this will just leave Donald's Duck Pond having never been open for guests. Hopefully, they will get whatever's going on with that splash pad figured out and fixed.
Yeah. I am excited because I feel like Toontown has not been able to be out in its full glory.
No, it hasn't.
At all since it's opened. Yeah. And if we could just get back to where the duck pond is the only thing not working, I think people would be really happy. Because when we were there, it's a little challenging to navigate this land because the walls are out so far.
Well, and this land
makes a bottleneck.
So the land's still crazy popular.
Mm-hmm.
So the bottleneck's even more so because there's so many guests very excited to go back to this newly reimagined area.
Yeah, I just feel bad because Toontown really had its moment to shine. It's still shining, mm-hmm. but just had a little bit. But I, as we've said before, I really appreciate that Disney is sticking to it and trying to make it right and not just having broken
exactly.
stuff. Well, a new fun activity is coming to the Disneyland Resort this Halloween season. The Disney Parks blog posted a Halloween time scavenger hunt around the Disneyland Resort. The scavenger hunt provides clues to find things in Disneyland, Disney California Adventure, and Downtown Disney.
I think this is so fun because, of course, we have the pumpkin pursuit, which is going on in Downtown Disney. But like Tag mentioned, this is it's a free scavenger hunt that anybody can do. And there's things in Disneyland Park, things in Disney California, and a couple of things in Downtown Disney. Just to give you an idea, one of the first things that they want you to try and find in Disneyland is on the main street you follow. If you look up after a while, you'll find a 20th century musician with a pompadour style. So it's just kind of fun little things. Disney California, DCA, there's something over at the Collector's Fortress to kind of pay attention and see if you see any familiar ghostly face in a certain part. Anyways, I just think it's fun because it's stuff that's there. There are details that are there, but maybe details that you've not noticed before.
Well, you know, we have friends over at the Where in the Park folks who have all these photos of these little details. And I think things like this are great to kind of showcase those small things that sometimes guests just walk right by and don't pay attention to. So the fact that Disney's kind of doing something like this and it's free, I think is great.
Well, in some of these, so I'm reading these. If you're a big Disneyland person, you could probably just read these and know exactly what they're hinting at. But I think it'd be fun, especially for like kids, because it's almost like a riddle. So it's not like Pluto's Pumpkin Pursuit where it tells like, you know, you're looking for a Minnie Mouse themed pumpkin. Okay, where did you find the Minnie Mouse themed pumpkin? This is kind of almost like a riddle to try and figure out what it is they're talking about and where it is.
Sure.
Well, Halloween is still about a week away, but Christmas is already moving in around the resort. Snow has started to fall on Sleeping Beauty Castle, resulting in the Disney 100 decor disappearing before the actual anniversary happened last week. Lights are going up in the trees on Main Street, and New Orleans Square is starting to have its decorations installed as well.
Yeah, it's always, I don't know, I had this weird moment when I was reading about all of this, and I was like, okay, like, I understand from watching the specials that you can watch that they've put out about, like, decorating the parks, that, like, the castle takes multiple nights mm-hmm. to get everything up there and make sure it doesn't damage the castle and all of this. But, I don't know, I feel like as the resort, I would just throw some more people at the problem and hold it till after Halloween.
It's tough. I think it's really tough because both holidays command such a... People get very, very excited for both holidays.
Yeah.
So back years ago, they used to be very obviously separated times. Halloween would go at least through Halloween, and then there'd be about a week where they'd be doing the transition, and then the holiday time stuff would start. Well, I think now, since the holiday time stuff is just as popular as the Halloween stuff, it's hard because Halloween's a set date. It's not like Halloween time is now. It's not really encroaching into anything. It's just encroaching into the just kind of generic summer stuff. So you can move that date up. Whereas holiday time date, you can't move that up.
Sure.
You know? So I don't like it either. It makes me laugh a little bit because it just kind of plays into the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah.
Or the Nightmare Before Christmas a little bit with the holidays colliding. So if they leaned into that a little bit more and maybe put like Jack's sleigh or something in front of the castle that has snow on it, then it would feel less out of place perhaps.
But I honestly expected this year. So when the 60th happened, I think it was, they didn't do the snow covering for the holidays. Oh. They kept it up for that year. So I kind of expected with the Disney 100, 100 years of the company, that maybe they just would forego doing the snow covering this year. I know it's popular and I know people like it, but it's there every year. So if it's not there 1 year out of so many, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
No, that's an interesting point.
So I'm not sure why they didn't just leave the Disney 100 stuff up and, you know, because like the fireworks show for the holidays and the parade don't rely on the fact that the castle has snow on it.
No.
So anyway, it's just one of those things where I kind of feel bad for the Disney 100 because I feel like it kind of had a slow going start. We had a lot of spelling errors and a bit weird stuff like that.
And we didn't
have the star on there for the longest time.
Not all the castle decor arrived right away. So
Yeah.
I hear you.
Speaking of Christmas, have you ever wanted to have breakfast with Santa? Well, if so, act fast, as Naples Ristorante will offer breakfast with Santa this holiday season on select days from November 25th through December 24th. Prices are $110 for adults and $50 for children, and includes a family-style breakfast, hot cocoa, and bottomless mimosas for adults, and stuffed animals, and a personalized stocking for kids. Book your spot at the link in our show notes.
This, I could see how, if you were someone local, this could be a fun tradition to do with the family. It is a little spendy, but somehow adult price at $110 and having kids all the way down at $50 makes it, I don't know, sting a little less. I guess I'm used to the kids' prices being close. Maybe I'm remembering wrong. I always thought children's prices were slightly discounted for other things. Maybe not. But it is spendy, but I could see how this would be a really fun thing to do. Well, for weekly tiers who have not had the chance to attend a mixology seminar at Trader Sam's, Disneyland News Today was able to and has a review of the Halloween version that happened recently. This is an experience I didn't know that I needed. It's after reading this article, I'm sold. For $169 plus $30.42 gratuity and tax, which brings the entire experience to $214.88, you get the newest tiki mug available at the time and this mixology course. The mixology course does include, this one specifically included two beverages, one alcoholic, one non-alcoholic. Tickets are prepaid only and they have a 3-day cancellation policy. The event sounds like so much fun and includes a small reception afterward with appetizers from Tongaroa Terrace.
Okay, so when I first saw the price, this is the same journey that the people for Disneyland News Today went through, which is I saw the price. I saw $169. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that doesn't seem awful because the tiki mugs are like sometimes up to $80 or whatever, so that's okay. Steady. You add the gratuity and tax, so it brings it to $214. I'm like, ooh, that's a lot of money. And so as I'm reading this experience, I'm like, okay, like, I'm not a big drinker. It's nice that they have a non-alcoholic option. It looks like they do a really nice job making it an entertaining event. It looks like it took them about 45 minutes just for the mixology portion.
And I would say the mixology portion's pretty... I don't want to say intense, but it's pretty involved.
Yeah.
Would be a good way to say
But they've
it.
Got a lot of things pre-measured for you and a bunch of different things.
Yep.
Which is really nice. And then they said afterwards, they went outside and by the fireplace there, they had this reception afterwards where they had a bunch of food and everything.
And live music.
And live music. And at that point, for $214, I'm like, you know, maybe it's worth it. One of the things they got was a poke bowl. Well, the poke bowls are like $20-something. So if you add up all the things together, plus the entertainment you get and all of that, I think it might actually be worth it.
There was a glow cube that they got to. I'm trying to scroll. The food was what really threw me. I would have thought like light appetizers, light snacks. Oh no, I'm going to go through it really quick. Basically, they got a small sampling of most of what is on the lunch menu. So the first thing they started off with was a small tofu lettuce wrap, followed by the poke bowl and a single coconut shrimp, a small plate of panko crusted long beans and a single pork dumpling. They also got a slider topped, a beef slider topped with pineapple and teriyaki sauce. And there was a second fireside alcoholic drink that was different from the one that they had made that they also got to sip and enjoy. So you get two alcoholic drinks, one non-alcoholic drink, plus all of that food, plus the class, plus
the mug.
So when you add that all together... Yeah.
And they made a great point, too, that if you don't want to, usually these mugs and these mixology classes are the same weeks that they do a mug release. And usually it's a couple days before the mug releases. So you get it before everybody else. And you don't have to worry about waiting in that line or trying to get a mobile order or any of that stuff. So I think if you're somebody who wants to take a mixology seminar, that you're interested in one of the tiki mugs, that kind of thing, I think it's totally worth it. And actually, this is one of those experiences, Teresa, that I think if we're ever there when they're doing something like this, this would be a cool experience to do. But you'd have to drink all my alcohol.
Well, oh boy. I was trying to think about, my thought was, if we would have done it like for this last one and got the Ursula's Cauldron giant, but I'm like, how are we getting these tiki mugs home was what
I was trying to think. Just pack clothes around it.
That's what I was trying to think of. I mean, I did just bring back way too many books and made that work, so I could probably make the tiki mug work too. But yeah, it would be fun. We should... Another thing to add to the Disney bucket list.
Yep. Well, for Disney's 100th anniversary on October 16th, the company threw a 23-hour cast member party. The event took place at Disneyland, but was backstage where cast members participated in a variety of activities, like a Disney 100 exclusive screenings, dunk tanks where cast members could dunk their leads, speed puzzling, and more. By the way, with those dunk tanks, Disney did donate money for each person dunked to a good cause.
Oh, fun.
Visit the link in the show notes to see the group photo taken after the park hours for the event.
You know, I'll be honest, I was a little disappointed that park celebrations were, there really wasn't anything. But I was disappointed in that. And I think a lot of people were probably disappointed in that. I wonder how many people booked reservations to be at Disneyland for the 100th to then get there and have nothing. I mean, they didn't even hand out celebratory buttons. But it appears that cast members were treated really, really well, which is awesome. So it looks like they were given all sorts of different goodies and snacks. I see this one table of people backstage. They all have matching Disney 100 ear hats on. So I'm going to assume that they were gifted those. Plus all the different fun and games. Like, I think that's great. If they're not going to do something for the general public and for guests, I am very happy that they did treat and have fun stuff for cast members, at least.
I love this photo, this photo that they took that was from
down Main Street.
It was down Main Street, like just the lighting on it and everything. It was, I don't know, it's just really cool. And I'm glad that the cast members got to experience some of this.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like I said, great photo after hours. I do wish they would have done something with guests, but that's okay. Like, it's past.
It is what it is, yeah. Well, artist Sam Carter, in partnership with senior Disney designer Melanie Lapovich, created some artwork celebrating Disney through the eras. The artwork was posted online on the Walt Disney Archives Facebook page this week. It's gorgeous. The artwork debuted at the D23 Disney 100 D23 Royal Anniversary Ball that took place at the Walt Disney Studios last week. Check out the link in our show notes to take a look at these gorgeous, gorgeous, I don't even, like, artwork, I don't know what you, they're amazing. Like,
what's
your
favorite decade?
I was gonna just say, I can't even pick a favorite decade because they're all that good. So,
this one's my favorite.
The thing that's really fun about each one of them is visually seeing what happened in the same year. Like, did you know that Did you know that Mary Poppins came out in the same decade as the Main Street Electrical Parade? You know, isn't that just fun to kind of like look at things and think of things that way?
That's true. Yeah, I don't know. That's my favorite one because it's got like Dragon and it's got Jose on it. It's a Small World. It's got a lot of stuff going on. I also like the Snow White one that's right above it because it's got Carcass.
So you like the 50s through 60s.
Yeah.
They're all so good. Like, look at the first one, the first decade, so the 20s to the 30s. I love that you've got Steamboat Willie in front, but you also have Oswald. I just think that's so great that Oswald gets some love. And there's really not much color in this one, except Oswald's got his blue shorts on, so I think that's fun, too.
Yeah, they're all great in their own ways.
They're all so good.
Look, Disney Cruise Line,
yeah,
Pixar
did you
stuff.
Know that the Disney Cruise Line came out the same year that the same decade as The Lion King? I think it's so fun.
And then the more recent stuff, you got Grogu and Star Wars and Marvel and Shanghai Disneyland. Yeah. It's cool. I think it was really creative. I kind of want to get these and put them like as a phone background.
I know.
Something.
They look like they'd be great. I know. I was thinking the same thing, like wallpapers for your computers or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Because, well, hang on now. Is it every 20 years? It must have been every 20 years.
It just said 20, eras. And if you look at the
one,
post.
One, two, three. Hang on.
So it says right
one,
here.
Two, three,
the
four,
20s, 30, okay. 20s, 30s, and 40s. Stupid things loading.
Yeah, so there's
30s and 40s,
yep,
50s
so
and 70s.
20, each photo represents a 20-year.
Not always. 20s, 30s and 40s, 50s and 70s, 80s, 90s to 2000s, and 2010s and 20s. So it kind of is all over the place. So just the eras.
Just eras. So cool.
Your attention, please. DL Weekly Trivia is now leaving for a Grand Circle tour of the Magic Kingdom. With stops at New Orleans Square, Mickey's Toontown, and Tomorrowland. All Weekly Tiers, board.
Welcome to Trivia Land, where we've got some great listener-submitted questions for you. How you feeling? You got some great trivia knowledge stuck in your heads, and you're ready to spill it all out?
We'll see.
It's this charade every week. I don't know. I just don't know.
All right. Well, let's see how you do. Your first listener-submitted question tonight comes from listener Todd B. In the queue for the Jungle Cruise, there is a sign on the dock that says, "Mind the Gap." What animal is hilariously depicted as trying to balance between a boat and the dock?
It's a giraffe.
Giraffe. Is that your final answer?
Yes.
I love the graphic. It's such a good sign.
All right. Your second listener submitted question from listener Elise K. What beverage company was once a sponsor of Fantasyland? Hint, they had their own cart with special music stationed there.
Oh. I was going to say Pepsi.
Can you read the first part of the question again?
What beverage company was once a sponsor of Fantasyland?
I'm going with Pepsi.
Yeah, I feel like I shouldn't overthink it.
All right, so both of you saying Pepsi? Final answer?
Yes.
Say yes?
Yes.
All right. Your third regular round question from listener Donna S. Who painted the mural that was behind the Welch's grape juice stand in Fantasyland for over 20 years?
Well, now he's asking that. I'm like, was it Welch's?
Right. Probably. It probably was.
Dang it.
And as soon as he started saying mural, I'm like, oh, Mary. Nope, wrong. I was thinking he was
going to say Tomorrowland.
So
who painted the mural behind the Welch's Grape Fruit Stand in Fantasyland?
Yeah.
You don't think it was Mary Blair?
I've not heard of a Mary Blair mural for Fantasyland.
because I have no other guess, I'm going to say Mary Blair.
I'm going to say...
Because didn't she also do the murals in Tomorrowland?
She did the murals in Tomorrowland. She did the contemporary that...
Yep, the goat with a four-legged goat.
Yeah, five-legged. There are some four-legged goats, too, yes. Okay, so you're going with Mary Blair.
Mm-hmm.
Can we have a hint of what the mural was?
Yes, it is centaurs and centaurettes, a unicorn, a fawn, and several winged cherubs traipse through a Sleeping Beauty-style landscape hauling a bounty of Concord grapes.
Oh, okay, so it's like from Fantasia.
Yes, it's very Fantasia-esque. The centaurettes have grapes as like bra tops or bikini tops, if you will.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say John Hench.
Oh.
John Hench?
And I said Mary Blair.
No. Ooh. No.
Ooh.
Herb Ryman.
Herb Ryman?
Yep.
I'm going to say Mary Blair still.
Yep. I think I'm going to go with Herb Ryman.
Herb Ryman. So Mary Blair and Herb Ryman. Final answer.
Yep.
Final. I know it took a while. Sorry.
That's okay. You were very fast on your first two questions, so I was worried this was going to be a short trivia land, so I'm glad you took your time on that one. All right, so final answers, Mary Blair and Herb Ryman.
Yes.
Excellent. And your fourth and final regular round question from listener Cooper C. What is the name of the Big Thunder Mountain theme song? Ooh. Special note, it is not heard on the ride itself. It was composed for the attraction's opening press event, and it tells the story of how the mountain got its curse.
Ooh. Whoa!
I didn't even know that such a thing existed.
Wow. What was the question you said? It was, what's the name?
What's the name of the Big Thunder Mountain theme song?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to call it the Big Thunder Suite.
Oh, I don't even know where to begin.
That's a like excellent, excellent question.
This is an excellent question.
Big Thunder Suite or Big Thunder Mountain Suite?
Big Thunder Suite.
Big Thunder Suite.
Okay. See, it's tough because I love Big Thunder Mountain and I feel like I should know this. But I don't. I don't have an answer for you, Vern. I got nothing.
You want to just hitch your wagon with Teresa?
Yeah.
Hitch your mine cart?
Hitch your mine cart to Teresa there?
Yeah.
All right.
You don't have to be on my mind card if you're going to be grumpy about it.
I'm not grumpy. I'm disappointed in myself. That's what it is.
All right. And your bonus question tonight from listener Todd B. What legendary literary character makes a cameo in Mr. Toad's Wild Ride?
Oh, I know this one because we...
Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, it is Sherlock Holmes.
Well, we think it's Sherlock Holmes.
No, it is.
You sound like you're questioning, and Teresa sounds very confident.
I'm confident because I keep spotting him. I spotted him when we were just there a couple weeks ago.
Well, the thing is Teresa was so sure I wanted to get my guess in there before she just said it.
I was pausing to be nice.
Yeah.
All right, so final answer, Sherlock Holmes.
I feel pretty okay about that one.
All right.
I pointed it out to you when we were there.
Mm-hmm. And what if you're wrong, Teresa? What are the stakes if you're wrong?
Made it up, I suppose. I'm not wrong.
Okay.
What are the stakes? You know what the stakes are? Loser buys the other a
I also said Sherlock Holmes, so I don't know how this works.
You were asking what the stakes were.
Okay.
The stakes are a cheesy pretzel garlic twist thing.
Okay.
All right. Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Stick around until after the discussion topic, and we can all find out together.
This week for our discussion topic, we are welcoming back a previous guest of ours that if you listened way back in episode 175, you will probably recognize Jeff, who we had on. He had his website that we were talking about back then was Disney at Work and DisneyAtPlay.com. Mm-hmm. And we are here because he has a new project that he's working on, and we want to talk to him about Disney 100. Welcome, Jeff, to the show.
Hey, it's so great to be back with both of you. It's terrific.
We're really excited. So Jeff actually emailed in and told us about his new project, which is perfect timing, especially since this month we celebrated the 100th anniversary of the Walt Disney Company. I have volume one in my hand of A Century of Powerful Disney Insights, and it's the first 50 years of the company. So I'm so excited to go through this because, yes, we are Disneyland focused, but you know that in our hearts, we hold a very special place for Walt and Roy because, of course, without them, we wouldn't have Disneyland. And so the history of it is so very, very important. So we're so excited to dive into this. But before we do, we're just going to do a short little intro round. Can you just tell us again, what is your Disney story? How did you get involved?
So I won't go through the same details as the last one. You listened to 175, but you should know that in 1972, I had this experience of going to Disneyland for the first time in a little while. I was, well, I would have been 11 at that time. And that was the year that Bear Country opened up with the Country Bear Jamboree, both theaters. It was the year that the Main Street Electrical Parade came out. And it was the first year I went to the Haunted Mansion, because back in 69, I was just too scared. And I bought the Haunted Mansion LP, the one with Ronnie Howard doing the narrative in it. And let me tell you, with all the Hatbox ghosts, if you look at that artwork back in that period, the center of all Haunted Mansion things was the Hatbox ghost back then. So anyway, I'm digressing. But anyway, that was just this amazing, amazing trip. And then the following year, I was just so into Disney. I was writing the company and saying, okay, so tell me, how do I get to because I don't even think I knew the word Imagineer yet. How do I design rides and attractions? And yes, I want to be an animator. And what can, and I'm sending you $10. What can you give me? And they would send me back. Actually, sometimes I think they send it back free, but I have park maps of Walt Disney World and Disneyland and things that they would send me. And one of it was a poster art of Walt Disney Productions' 50th anniversary.
Oh, wow.
And that's when I learned about the fact that the Walt Disney Company was established on October 16th, 1923. And that was huge. That was a moment where the karma and the clouds opened up and sheer inspiration flew down from the heavens, because that's my birthday. Not that I'm 100, but it falls on October 16th. And I was just like, this is great karma here, because this means I am meant for Disney. And so I knew, by the way, just so you know, a little story about that. It was only a year or two prior that Dave Smith had written, and mind you, Dave Smith came in during the Roy Disney years, and he did the whole thing with organizing and archiving Walt's offices and all of that. But anyway, he wrote an email. Well, not an email. There was no email. He wrote a memorandum of understanding to Card Walker, who was in charge at that point, and said, Card, just wanted you to know that the official date that Walt Disney Productions was established was October 16th, 1923. And Card wrote back and he said, I don't have time to even think about this. We're trying to get Walt Disney World up and running. We'll come back to it. So they did come back to it. And we could talk about that a little later. But that's how I came to know about it. So I have followed this anniversary for years. I was the only one celebrating when everybody else was forgetting about it. In fact, 25 years ago, if you didn't know, 25 years ago was the 75th anniversary. There was a very limited amount of merchandise, but I have a beautiful portrait of Mickey, and it has the Cheshire Cat and Tinkerbell and a bunch of other characters. And it was just a really beautiful piece that was done for the 75th. I have that hung. Fantasmic at what was then Disney MGM Studios opened that week. That was how we honored the 75th anniversary 25 years ago. Mind you, Disneyland had already opened up theirs, but this was the opening of Fantasmic in connection with the 75th anniversary. Not a whole lot done. So I have been anticipating this 100th thing for some time, and it is waxed heavy on my mind that I needed to do something significant for this. I feared that if I didn't do it, nobody would. So I got crazy and silly. And I decided, I had written several books on Disney before, but I felt like a book needed to be written about the 100 years of Disney. And what were the messages? What ideas do we take from random things like El Grupo, Walton E. El Grupo in South America, or the Silly Symphonies, or 20,000 Leagues? What are the stories, what are the messages in there for us as we kind of go into the next century? What are the lessons, the ideas and inspiration to be learned? And so I started writing on that. I really got into a heavy crunch when I was on my cruise, Disney cruise to Alaska over the summer, up early in the morning in Tiana's lounge, writing and so forth. And
like a wonderful office.
Yes, it's a great office, a little trolley thing. Anyway, I came to a conclusion. I've got a lot of pages going down in this thing. So I had to make a difficult decision when I finally got it in front of the editor. I said, I don't think this should be one book. I think it needs to be two volumes. And so that's how volume one came out. Volume one is 1923 to 1973, which I titled The Walt and Roy Disney Years. Roy died at the end of 71. And so it kind of goes a little beyond that. And we kind of now go into the Card Walker, Don Tatum, Ron Miller, and then ultimately we'll go into the whole Michael Eisner and Bob Iger and that other Bob thing. And we got a whole lot more ahead of us. That is just, in fact, today I was flying back from Washington State and I literally was writing the preface to volume two. Wow. And thinking about, did you both have a chance? And shame if you didn't, but did you both have a chance to see Once Upon a Studio over the weekend?
Yes.
Oh, it's so good.
Let us say glorious together, because yes. it was glorious. I just bawled. So was there a part of it that you just said, this is so cool? Was there a particular character that showed up or something that you said that was really cool?
So the thing that and I'm sure hit everybody very, very hard was Mickey stopping and pausing at Walt's portrait. That was just.
Yeah.
Incredible. There was even things that I need to go watch it again, because I feel like there was a lot more layers and Easter eggs of things I didn't catch the first time, because I realized at the end they intentionally had, who was it? It was Snow White, Mulan, and then the new princess. I don't
yes.
know. I forget her
from
name.
From Wish.
Yeah. And so Mulan, like, of course we had Snow White was the first. I think Mulan, like, I think it was
Belle Fur. Well, so let me just, back into that, because that is my favorite moment. So I don't want to give spoilers, but there's Goofy goofs up.
Yes.
and Grumpy says, oh, yeah, well, we might as well forget about this. And somebody says, yeah, I guess we could try it again in another 100 years, and they start to turn around and all of a sudden they hear music. Yeah. And they look up onto the building. And yeah, this is a spoiler there. But darn it, if you haven't seen this, shame, shame, shame on you. But at any rate, he looks up on the building and there is Alan O'Dale. Mm-hmm. Who was the rooster in Robin Hood.
Yep.
And he starts to play When You Wish Upon a Star.
Yeah.
And then Belle and Beast. When's the last time you heard Beast join into something,
Right.
Belle and Beast join in, and then the Hunchback joins in, and then the other princesses you mentioned and so forth. But I thought that was the emotional moment for me when I saw this character from Robin Hood, because subtract 50 years and the film that came out that year was Robin Hood.
Oh,
that was so. So when I see that, I think, wow, we have just tripped 50 years. And here's this character that a lot of people don't even know who he is. Mm-hmm. And he starts to play this and then the others join in. And oh, yeah, I am so melting in tears because. That is my life. That was my childhood seeing Robin Hood. That was the film that I kept seeing and seeing and seeing. And here it was playing this one pivotal moment, small pivotal moment in there. So I just absolutely love that. And there could not be enough things to celebrate the 100th anniversary of this organization. Few companies have actually existed that long. Most of them get bought up, sold out, spit up. You know, they end sooner than that. This company has not only existed for 100 years, it has thrived. It has become arguably the greatest global entertainment experience and has warmed our hearts for decades. We have generations going back through all this. And I just felt like something needed to be written, something needed to be said, something needed to be celebrated about the last 100 years. And that's how we got to releasing this book.
That's wonderful. I have this weird thing with my internet. Every once in a great while on a Zoom call, it'll like freeze for 10 seconds. So when Teresa was talking about what she enjoyed from the Once Upon a Studio deal, I just wanted to mention my thing quick.
Yeah.
Which is, again, we've already spoiled. So spoiler alert. But I really enjoyed and was very touched by Mickey coming up the stairs and looking at the picture of Walt and just kind of having that moment. And I thought that it was gracefully done that he kind of says something along the lines of like, well, the show's got to go on. Like you're gone, but we still got to keep moving. But like, there was still like kind of like a tribute there. And I thought that that was really touching. And I thought that was great because my other podcast that I'm on, we did a podcast last night and we were talking about the Disney 100 exhibit with the AI generated Walt.
Yeah.
And talking about how like touching that was to have kind of like Walt there and stuff. And so, yeah, I thought it was really good. I thought that you're talking about little Easter egg kind of details, like the fact that that was from Robin Hood, you know, at the halfway point. I noticed that it seemed like there was a lot of new animation in there. Like they hadn't lifted this from the existing movies. They like actually animated new stuff for it. And I noticed that they kept the same look from that time. So like the Dalmatians had that kind of rough look, but it was like new animation. And like Cinderella like was not as smooth in her animation like she was in the original movie. Like she wasn't as totally smooth. So I thought that it was amazing that they kept the visual look from each movie into this, because that is part of who they are as characters, was the way that they were presented to us. And so I thought the attention to detail, the sheer number of characters, and just kind of the message, I thought was wonderful. I did not know what this was going to be before I watched it. And I had seen people in our Discord chat talk about it, and I came to it a little bit late, but I thought it was really well done.
A couple of pieces on that. Yeah. One of the artists who leaves the building right before they come to life, Bernie Mattinson, 70 years in animation.
Yeah, they say that at the end. Yeah.
Talk about him. Yeah. And they note him at the end. That scene that you talk about with Mickey and Walt, they brought in Bob Sherman in to Walt's office where he would play the piano on Fridays. And he would play that piece on Fridays and had him record that for this piece. And they brought in a lot of other previous animators who had done, I'd done this, yeah, I'd done that. And voices, if you look at the voices that they brought in to do that, it was just so great and so funny and so touching. My favorite is the bathroom scene where the guys are primping themselves. and my son's favorite character is the Headless Horseman. And of course, there's the Headless Horseman with no head, you know, primping himself in front of the mirror. It was glorious. It was absolute glorious thing. And I think we should, I do not think we should let up to the fact that this is a time to remember our heritage. And so let me just share what happened on October 16th. You are all familiar with the storyteller's statue, Suitcase in a Dream, Disney California Adventure, Mickey, Walt, Suitcase. That moment where he came on a train without Mickey, that would be a few years later. But when he came on the train with that suitcase, it was the summer of 1923. And it wasn't a suitcase and a dream. It was bankruptcy. It was illness. And it was unemployment. Walt had gone bankrupt in Kansas City trying to make the Alice series, the first version of the Alice series, work, and he couldn't make it work. And it actually took several years before he settled with his creditors on the bankruptcy. He didn't just like walk away. He had to carry that as part of what was in that suitcase, so to speak. Illness wasn't Walt's issue. It was Roy's issue. Walt and Roy had been back in Kansas City. They had been together as they had been most of their lives. But Roy came down sick. He thought it was some kind of issue with his throat. They thought it was tonsillitis. They suggested him going to get it taken care of during the lunch hour so he didn't have to miss work. So typical of Roy. But it scarred. And then he ended up back in the hospital. They took x-rays. They found it was tuberculosis. He ended up in Santa Fe. Too cold. Ended up in Tucson. Too hot. Came out to California just right. And that's where he was at the time Walt came out to California. And then when Walt came, he had no job. So he was unemployed. He's looking for jobs. Well, Roy's like, go get a job, kid. Well, so Walt would use his little car and try to get into the studios. But he after he spent a few minutes trying to get in and talk to somebody, then he'd spend the rest of the day out at the back lot looking at how all the pictures were filming and thinking maybe he'd be a director. But he wasn't going to be a director. He thought that the animation business, it's gone to New York. There's no hope there. Roy said, I think we can make this work here. And so they reached back out to Margaret Winkler and said, could we try this again? And they created a new agreement. And that agreement was signed on October 16th. And they were living with their uncle at the time. They worked initially out of their uncle's garage, which is how many great organizations come out of garages.
Right. Garages are important.
Exactly. And so and that was the beginning. Now, mind you, 23 to 28, that's 5 years of working the Alice series and then working Oswald and being taken by everybody along the way before he finally got into doing Mickey Mouse. But these were the years, the early years of the Disney brothers as they established their first studio. And it really is amazing what progress they made over a very long haul. But there is no reason they should have continued. They should have, the whole thing should have gone broke.
Well, discouraged. I mean, how, just look at Oswald. You have this success of a character and then you have, it's not yours anymore. And then you have to part with this character and start all over again. How, you know, picking yourself back up from something like that's huge, but they did it.
Yeah. At one point, they had had a relationship with Bank of America and it had gone on and on since the days of Snow White and maybe even a little before then. And in the 40s, things were not in a good place because of the war, because of the depression prior to it and all that. And the bankers came down and met with Walt and Roy one day. And it looked like they were going to, you know, pull them out. And the head of Bank of America showed up that day and he got in that room and he grilled all the other executives of the bank and said, so did you see this film? Did you see that film? Did you have a chance to see that play out? And most of them had not seen the movies that Walt had been creating. He said, well, I've seen them and I think they're pretty good. And even though he's had some tough times, I think they're going to make it and they're going to be okay. And we just need to hang with them. And so we're going to hang with them. And he left the room and they kept their agreements with Bank of America. That went on for years. Bank of America was in the 60s, 70s for sure, the sponsor of It's a Small World at Disneyland. And so they were a prominent part of the Disney experience for so long. But man, they had some tough times hanging in there. Walt faced some depression and some difficult times. Sometimes he became a little irate and short. And, you know, Roy had to kind of work with him. And Roy Disney is the unsung hero of the Walt Disney Company. Mm-hmm. He really hung through that time through all those years with him.
Yeah. Well, and just think, you know, without Roy, Walt, like, Roy was the one making sure Walt wouldn't have had any money if it weren't for Roy, for sure, because he was just very, you know, much more creative minded. So he needed the balance. But yeah, he was kind of a, I don't want to say it, he, like you said, unsung hero. And a lot of people don't realize that if he wasn't present, it would not have gotten to where it is today by any means.
And props to Roy for seeing that his, you know, little brother, that this was a great idea, you know, and believing in the vision, because, you know, he didn't, you know, he could have just as easily been like, well, that's dumb, we're moving on, I'm not going to help you. But also, I always think it's so touching that Roy basically came out of retirement and put the literal last energy of his life into Walt Disney World and making the final dream of his brother a reality. And shortly, like you alluded to earlier, shortly after Disney World opened, he passed away. Yeah. Like, I literally think it took the last of his life to get this project done for his little brother. And I think that's the ultimate, like, love letter, right, between the two of them.
Absolutely. Because... Well, and I think it was John Hanch that said, you know, Roy spent his life trying to get out of debt.
Yeah.
And Walt kept trying to put them into debt, essentially, trying this project and this project. And so it was such a tension. Mm-hmm. In truth, it's show business. Walt was the master showman, and thank goodness somebody minded the bank with Roy Disney. But what's telling about it is, as they went into Walt Disney World and its opening, Roy had managed to keep that entire massive project debt-free. Now, so you understand, I think most of us know that Walt wanted to build a whole big city there.
Mm-hmm. Epcot. Which would have been amazing.
Which would have been, well, that would have been a mid-century architecturally interesting thing.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. But they and Roy was like, oh my gosh, we can't go building a town from scratch. This is so the one thing they agreed upon was that the Magic Kingdom and those resorts would be phase one. And moreover, that if you understand the Walt Disney World property, the Magic Kingdom sits on the far north end away from I-4 and 192. And so they agreed to put that as the carrot at the end of the stick way on the north end of the property. So people would have to go past the city or whatever would be developed. And in fact, the last night before Walt passed away, he's laying in his hospital bed. There are square ceiling acoustical tiles in his, and he's pointing to these tiles and how to, as if it were a map of Walt Disney World. Well, the one thing they agreed on was that they would build project the first phase on the far north. And what that meant was a whole lot of infrastructural expense, roads, canals, electrical systems, plumbing, so all of those kinds of things had to be put. It would have been a whole lot more affordable if they had just hugged that Magic Kingdom right up against 192 and I-4, but they didn't. They pushed it all the way to the back, which was Roy's commitment to Walt Disney, even after he passed, was building it. And of course, there's a great story. There is a great story where they're all in a meeting and all the executives of the company, and Roy's there, Walt has passed on. They're talking about the Disney World project. They're talking about the challenges of the Disney World project. They're talking about how to make the Disney World thing. And Roy stops them. And he says, I want everyone to understand, from this point on, we refer to this as Walt Disney World. Everyone buys a fort, but nobody necessarily knows who made the fort. I want my brother's name at the front of this project. And let me tell you, since I became a Disney cast member, I was taught on day one, nomenclature and all, you do not refer to this place without referring to Walt Disney World. And that has always been my mantra to carry forth. But anyway, where I'm going with all this is, he agreed to do all this. He got to opening day and he's debt free. And they get to opening. They open the park, and they had had delays in opening, but no delay was bigger than the resort hotels. The resort hotels were going to be managed by USS Steel because, well, we all like to go to a USS Steel hotel, right? But they had this technology for building how they thought they would build the hotels. It really was an interesting concept. It put them into cost overruns. It threw back the time plan. They were late, and they honestly did not know how to manage a hotel. They just didn't know how to do that. And so what people don't know is that one of the very last decisions Roy made after opening of Walt Disney World, as you talk about the fact that it's only a couple of months between opening and his passing. One of the very last decisions he makes, and I actually met a driver of one of the boats one day, and he said, let me tell you a story. One time, Roy Disney was on my boat, and he was the only one on the boat, and he said, would you take me for a drive? And so we just quietly, I didn't say anything to Roy. I just quietly drove him around the Seven Seas Lagoon and Bay Lake. And then when he got back, Roy said to the dock, Roy said, thank you. I had a really important decision I needed to make, and I needed some time alone. He said later that afternoon, it was announced that Disney would purchase USS Steel's interest in the resorts and subsequently took over the whole resort operation. So the last thing Roy Disney does is not a financially conservative thing. It's the very thing his brother would have done, take ownership of the hotel so that they ran and owned the hotel. And that just speaks volumes about how someone who really did want to save money for a rainy day put his brother before that. And that's the testament to that experience. That's amazing.
I'm just so happy that Roy is kind of having the spotlight shown on him. I know it's, you know, post everything that he did and he didn't get to see that, but I still think it's very important. It's so touching to me that there's, instead of like the partners, I can't remember what it's called, with him and Minnie at Walt Disney World.
Yeah.
I think that statue is just,
isn't that so sweet?
Incredibly sweet. And it's so touching. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. And their lives were spent doing this. Now, mind you, by the time Roy passes, this organization is still the smallest studio in Hollywood.
Really?
It is way behind the Columbias and the Warner Brothers and the MGMs. And so what's interesting is now we go through a phase where 50 years after all that, this company exceeds anything and everything else. And by the way, I don't know if most people know it, but all the studio corporations, the only one that is still ran in Hollywood today is the Walt Disney Company. Everybody, for instance, NBC, which has studios there, they report up to Comcast, and Comcast and is up in New York City. And most of them have moved to New York or elsewhere. So it is still, this is the quintessential Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it's the quintessential Hollywood story. You know, a kid, rags to riches kind of experience. And yet the riches meant nothing to Walt. He absolutely had to invest it on something bigger and better in the process.
And we all benefited from it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we all benefited from that as a result.
Well, we had so much to talk about with our guest, J. Jeff Kober, that we're going to have to continue this next week where we finish our conversation with him. So tune in next week.
It's okay. I'll be the only weekly tier without an answer. Make sure you send your questions to Producer James or Producer Vern at trivia@doweekly.net.
Welcome back to Trivia Land. How are we feeling about how you did tonight?
You know, not
pretty
bad.
Okay.
Yeah, you feel pretty confident? All right, well, let's find out how it went. Here, our first listener-submitted question from listener Todd B. In the queue for Jungle Cruise, there is a sign on the dock that says, Mind the Gap. What animal is hilariously depicted as trying to balance between a boat and the dock?
It's so good.
Both of you being very quick to know the answer to that one, saying it's a giraffe, and the correct answer that I was looking for was a giraffe.
Woohoo!
And good to job, any us. Listener that hasn't checked out that sign, it is a very cute sign. It's the giraffe with its long legs, and it's got a boat on one side and the dock on the other. It's one of my favorite signs. Very cute.
He's looking all sorts of, they are looking all sorts of discombobulated.
Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. That's one sign that I always look at before we go. Too. I don't know why.
Me too, because it's so cute.
Your second listener submitted question from listener Elise K. What beverage company was once a sponsor of Fantasyland? They even had their own cart with a special music stationed there. Both of you saying Pepsi. The correct answer that I was looking for was Welch's.
You know, when you think about it. You know,
we called it when he came to the next question. We're like, yeah, yep,
of course.
Yep.
You know, and when you think about it, juice for Fantasyland makes a lot of sense.
And originally the questions were in different order, and I looked at that and I said, ooh, I gotta change that order or I'm giving away answers.
Yeah. Well, smart thinking there.
Thank you. Thank you. So, your third regular round question from listener Donna S. Who painted the mural that was behind the Welch's grape juice stand in Fantasyland for over 20 years, from 1955 to the mid-70s, which, interestingly, I cannot find a date on when that mural ceased to exist, so if any listener has a hint on when that mural disappeared, I would appreciate knowing, because I can find who painted it and when they painted it, but I don't know anything about when it disappeared. So, Tag said Mary Blair painted that, and Teresa said Herb Ryman painted that. The correct answer that I was looking for was, and I might be screwing up the pronunciation here, so I'm going to go with two options, either Avond or Ivond Earl.
Ivond.
Ivond Earl. All right.
Oh. You know, I've never actually seen a picture of this that I recall, and so I've pulled a picture up. I will put this in our show notes.
That makes total sense. Oh, look, here's the Welch's grape juice stand, too.
Yeah.
That makes a heck of a lot of sense that mural, because they're all carrying grapes.
Yep, to the Welch's grape juice stand. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That makes a whole lot of sense.
And your fourth and final regular round question from listener Cooper C. What is the name of Big Thunder Mountain's theme song? Said song never heard on the ride itself. It was composed for the attraction's opening press event, and it tells the story of how the mountain got its curse. Teresa said, the Big Thunder Suite. And Tag hitched his mining cart to that answer. The correct answer that we were looking for was the Ballad of Big Thunder Mountain.
Oh, close.
Oh, I was so close.
Close.
You know, for a total,
for a complete shot in the dark guess, not terrible.
Not bad.
Terrible at all.
So, Vern.
Yes.
We dug a little further, and it may have been in through the 80s. Or through the, like, 1980, I think it was.
Okay, because everything that I found was that it was there for over 20 years. But I could never find an exact date.
Yeah, you know what? From you've got the
stupid encyclopedia.
But this does say from July 24th, 1955 through 1980.
Okay.
But we're going to double check with the encyclopedia. The Welch's Grape Juice Stand is where the Village House, or now Red Rose Tavern, is.
It was there from 1956 to 1981, according to the Disneyland Encyclopedia, the unofficial, unauthorized, and unprecedented history of every land, attraction, restaurant, shop, and major event in the original Magic Kingdom. So it said it was there until 1981.
And Disney Food Blog had until 1980. So maybe it was late 1980, early 1981. Interesting.
Yeah. It ended up, the Pinocchio Daring Journey and Geppetto's Arts and Crafts opened where the theater in Welch's had been.
Oh, okay. So not where the Village House now, Red Rose Tavern is. So it actually was part of what's now Pinocchio's attraction.
Yeah.
Interesting. Geppetto's Workshop. Very cool.
Real-time follow-up.
And your bonus question tonight, from listener Todd B. What legendary literary character makes a cameo in Mr. Toad's Wild Ride? both of you saying that that was Sherlock Holmes. Mm-hmm. And the correct answer that we were looking for was Sherlock Holmes.
Was it Mr. Watson? Dr. Watson? What's his like sidekick?
Yeah, Watson. Yeah.
That would have been funny if it was like, and it was Watson.
It's not. It's Toad. Not Toad. It's, see, there he is.
Yeah, up in the window. Good mm-hmm. job.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Do you think you've got that perfect question and you'd really like to hear us ask it on the air sometime? If you've got that great question, feel free to send it in to us at trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
And thank you to our editor, Sidel, for masterfully editing this episode and making sure all the show notes are posted.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us, and we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
Saving money on exterior wall lights now at Menards. Find your style with Patriot Lighting. Exterior lights enhance the look of your home. Choose from over 50 options from Patriot Lighting. Now through May 19th, get $10 instant savings on a single qualifying purchase of $100 or more on in-stock outdoor wall lights. Check out our entire selection of outdoor lights and see the rest of our deals happening now on Menards.com.
Save money.